grandma takes it.
All right, I call this meeting of House Finance to order. Let the record reflect that it is 1:32 p.m. on Tuesday, February 7th, 2023. Present today in our Representative Josephson, Representative Hanning, Representative Galvin, Representative Flom, Representative Cronk, Representative Tomaszewski, Representative Stapp, Co-Chair Edgman, Co-Chair Foster, and myself, Co-Chair Johnson. Thank you to our moderator today, Leslie Kelsey Riker from the LIO, and our Finance Secretary, Leah Frazier, for being with us today. And before we get started, happy birthday to to Helen Phillips, our Finance Committee Coordinator. Thank you. Today we're receiving an overview from the state state debt summary and credit review presented by Ryan Williams, State Debt Manager, Department of Revenue, and Fadil Lamani, Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Revenue. Mr. Williams, if you would like to come forward, place yourself on the record and introduce yourself and anyone else that's with you today.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. It's great to see a lot of familiar faces today. For the record, my name is Fadil Lamani. I'm the Deputy Commissioner of Department of Revenue. Before we get started on the presentation, I'd like to provide you with some background in terms of my experience. Some 15 years ago, I started my professional career working in public accounting. I started working with KPMG, one of the big four accounting firms, for approximately 5 years, where I was the senior audit associate, where I dealt with a variety of different clients from banking to municipal state governments to benefit plans to mortgage lenders, amongst other industries. Shortly after I left public accounting, I started working for the North Slope Borough for about 7 years, where I was the Deputy Director of Finance, where I oversaw all elements of finance from debt service to managing central treasury, budgeting, the borough's investment portfolio on the permanent fund, amongst property tax and other duties as assigned. After I left the North Slope Borough, I formed my own company, which is called AAA Financial and Business Consulting Services. In that capacity, I was engaged by the North Slope Borough School District to serve as their chief financial officer, where I did that for about 3 years. And now, just recently, I was appointed as the Department of Revenue Deputy Commissioner. With your permission, Madam Chair, I'd like to introduce the debt manager, Mr. Williams, so he can provide some background.
Good afternoon, co-chairs and entire committee. My name is Ryan Williams. I work with the Department of Revenue, and I've been there for approximately 13 years. Almost that entire time, I've been in the debt management section with the Treasury Division. Thank you.
All right, welcome. Seeing no questions at this time, I'll let you go ahead and get started on your presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In today's presentation, we're going to be covering the state bond rating overview, the current market update, our current date refunding that we initiated a couple weeks ago, and then I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Williams, who's going to talk about the state general fund obligation and also the debt capacity. Moving into page 4 of the PowerPoint presentation, when we think about of a bond rating, we think of a grade that's being assigned to the bonds that validates the credit worthiness and the credit quality of the issuer. These ratings are assigned generally by third-party independent rating agencies. Some of those agencies that have existed for a long period of time are Standard & Poor's, Moody's, Investor Services, and Fitch Ratings. The rating agencies conduct a very thorough analysis when they're looking at the financial stability and performance of an issuer, and they conduct a very rigorous criteria evaluation. And every rating agency has its own set of criteria that differs from the other, but they generally focus on five key categories, which is the governmental framework, the financial management, the economy, the budgetary performance, and the debt profile of the issuer. Once the assessment is done of the evaluation, and oftentimes when an issuer goes out to market, they produce what's so-called an official statement disclosure, which provides contacts of the issuer. And so that, coupled with the information that they gather, they end up assigning a rating. And so an investment grade is considered anything from a triple B all the way to a triple A. And then non-investment grade is anything from a D all the way to a double B. And sometimes these are considered junk bond ratings. Investment grade, it means very low risk to the investors, which benefits the borrower, as it's a very low interest rate on the coupons. On the flip side, for the non-investment grade, the lower the grading, the higher the interest borrowing rate, because some of these bonds may warrant either a default, or there's a concern about the ability for once being able to meet those debt covenants and debt service payments.
Okay. Co-Chair Edgman, do you have a question?
Yes, sorry for throwing in a question this early, but do bond rating agencies, at least in my memory they don't, but do they factor in for Alaska the 10-year budgeting plan?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Edgman, they do look at all aspects of the forecast. The revenue resources book is mostly what they rely upon, but they also do look at the 10-year plan that's produced by the OMB.
Just as a quick follow-up, Madam Co-Chair, and obviously it's too early for them to opine on carbon tax credits as being any primary source of revenue.
And let the record reflect that we were joined at 1:40 p.m. by Representative Orquez. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representatives Edgman, in our recent rating meeting that we had, Moody's was very interested. Obviously, they've seen a lot of the publications out there and the governor's vision as it pertains to carbon credits. It's something that they're intrigued. That's something that they want to look at from a credit perspective, as it adds an additional revenue source to the state. Obviously, it's too early to project what the actual revenues are going to look like, but it's something that's in their radar and are going to be looking forward to seeing as this materializes.
Okay, thank you.
Looking at slide 5 of the presentation, this just gives us a snapshot of what the state's current rating is. For Moody's, we have AA3 with a stable outlook. With S&P Global, it's AA minus with a positive outlook. And for Fitch Ratings, we have A plus with also a stable outlook. A second part of the presentation demonstrates what the rating has looked like since 1961 from Moody's and also S&P as well as Fitch. The highest rating that the state used to have was back in 2012, where we had a AAA rating. There has been a change to the rating in the last couple of years. A lot of that was due to the adoption of the POMV, as well as the surplus within fiscal year 2022. which has warranted the change on the stable and positive outlooks of the state's credit.
Thank you. We have a question, Representative Stapp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. through the chair, quick question. So do the bond rating agencies assess our credit rating health on factors, not just the budgetary factors, but say like long-term liabilities factors, whether or not they feel like they're funded adequately or not?
Thank you for that question. Through the chair, Representative Stapp, yes, they do. One of the factors that they do look as the long-term liabilities, the debt service, as well as the net pension obligation that the state has on their books.
Thank you. All right, thank you. And then Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Moody's rating on there, just because I don't understand what that means, it's the capital A, small a cubed. So is that less than a triple A rating? Just show me how that ranks against the others under the Moody's ranking on top.
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Hannon, with Moody's is essentially just adding the number to that third letter. So, for instance, when we have a double A two, instead of having a like a double A minus, it's essentially a double A two. And so for the other two rating agencies, is relatively the same for both S&P and Fitch. But for Moody's, they're just adding the number to that last letter.
One follow-up.
Follow-up, Representative Hannon.
This, my math is a long ways away. So double A cubed is a better rating than the double A minus, but it's less than a triple A.
It's equivalent.
Okay. Thank you.
Moving over to slide six. This provides the state's rating compared to the other states within the United States. As you can see here, it's highlighted what the state's current rating is. Compared to other states, the state of Alaska has a very solid high credit rating, although some of the other states may have a little bit more diverse economy or tax base. The state of Alaska, due to its financial standing, position that it's had over the years, it still has a pretty good high grade rating. Slide seven.
Excuse me, we have a question from Representative Galvin.
Thank you. Through the chair, we've been asking quite a few people about different rankings statewide with many issues and topics, and so I wonder, in looking at this, if you have been able to place us, are we in the top third, are we in the middle, or in the bottom? I'm seeing a lot of A's, so it's hard for me to articulate that, and I wondered if you had done any checking in on that.
Through the chair, to Representative Galvin, just generally speaking, it's maybe slightly under the 50% baseline. There are a lot of high-rated states, and a lot of them have a tax base where it's easy to calculate certain recurring revenues. I think maybe we are a little bit outside of the box because we derive a lot of our revenues from oil and gas and investment income.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Moving forward to slide seven. Thinking of the long-term effects of a bond rating, some of the concerns or the challenges that we see from a rating aspect is that the state of Alaska is very unique when it comes to our rating evaluation. We're very different compared to other states. As I mentioned a little bit earlier today, we're very reliant upon oil and gas and also the earnings from the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. Some of the other states have a little bit more stability as they traject their budgets into the future. At the same time, a lot of the metrics that are formulated by the rating agencies, it's something that the state of Alaska doesn't necessarily conform to. And what I mean by that is, for instance, looking at the net pension obligations. So when we look at the state's pension plans, they're very well funded compared to the other states in the country. However, from a metric standpoint, they compare the net pension liability in comparison to GDP as opposed to looking at the plan assets compared to the plan liabilities. So that's a difference that obviously with the population figures that we have within the state, it's not a fair comparison compared to other states. So we see necessarily a weak observation on the rating agencies from that perspective. Another concern of theirs is being able to see a structurally balanced budget and how much of a reliance from the POMV, from the earnings reserves. At the same time, being able to have a more diversified economic tax base. Like we mentioned earlier, we've made some strides ever since 2013. We've been able to reduce our spending, coupled with the favorable market conditions. We've seen an increase in the price of oil. We've seen the funding levels within our pension, where it's been these percentages here on the 87 and the 93, they also do include the health care. And so from a outlook moving forward, one of the things that we're wanting to do is be able to mirror our rating approach as it conforms to the rating agency's criteria. At the same time, looking at engaging another rating agency that does a little bit more thorough, comprehensive assessments on the credit quality for issuers that are very unique, such as that of the state of Alaska. Slide number 9 gives you a snapshot of the market overview where we're at today. You might ask why we've included this information here. We wanted to give you a snapshot of where things are, as we just recently did a refunding for some of our outstanding bonds. There's a lot of data points here in this slide. You will look at the information on the left-hand side. It's the current rates that were as of January 26, prior to the state going out for pricing in the market. You can see the 5-year treasury, the 10 years and 30 years. And then also next to it is the comparison from the week over week from 119 through 126. And then also looking at it from a month over, which is the time frame of 1223 through 126. And then also the change in year to date. Also in this slide, you have the what's called the municipal market data. It's the yield curves for some of those ratings, for a AAA rating, for a AA, BBB, and an A rating over that timeline from the 5-year treasury all the way to the 30-year treasuries.
If I might just go back to the slide 7. And I was just wondering if some of the problems that we had had with our little bit with our tax credits and so on that had caused some of the banks, really worldwide, but different banks saying that they're not, or even climate change where they weren't going to finance things in Alaska. Does that have any kind of indication in how this is put together at all? I mean, does that have any impact at all?
Thank you, Madam Chair, for that question. I think a lot of the rating agencies over the last 3 to 4 years have taken that into consideration, the ESG framework as it pertains to their rating criteria. So, yes, they do, in fact, take that into consideration for the ratings. To what degree it has an impact, it's not very easily distinguishable. due to the state offset some of those areas of if they have a concern. They look at the financial prudency of the state that sort of makes up or offset some of those areas where they may otherwise provide a lower score.
Okay. All right, thank you. Sorry, I didn't mean to go backwards, but thank you.
Moving over to slide number 11, through the efforts of our debt manager, Mr. Williams, in December, we looked at the possibility of doing a refunding of some of the existing bonds. It's also considered a refinancing. And generally, these are done if there's an interest rate environment that warrants cost savings, or at times is done due to restructuring the maturities. In this case, for the state, it's solely to benefit on the interest rates being in our favor, where they were providing a net present value savings. So what we ended up doing was taking the 2012 A bonds as well as the 2013 bonds. So for the 2012, the par amount was $7.4 million, and for the 2013 B bonds, we had $50.2 million. In being able to refinance these bonds, we ended up having a net present value savings of approximately $1.7 million. This does not change the maturities as they were previously set out. However, we did see a little bit of a cost savings. One of the things that we found out, and this goes more to the state's credit, is the fact that the state has not been in the market for quite some time. However, within an hour of the state being in the open market, we essentially sold all of our bonds, and we saw a great interest from large institutional banks, such as that of Goldman Sachs and Citibank, some of these institutional buyers that took a very strong view on the ESG framework. And so one thing to note here is that under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act that was introduced back in 2017 or acted into law, historically issuers can take a greater benefit if they had call option provision on their bonds, which meant that if there was an interest savings, they can call the bonds out way out into the maturities. What this legislation ended up doing is actually limiting the issuers to only doing 90 days to maturity. So this was a great benefit that existed in the past where issuers would see significant savings. Now that is limited to only 90 days. And so we still saw some savings for these two issuers, and any sort of money that we can save helps. There's no other questions, Madam Chair. I'd like to turn this over to Mr. Williams, who's going to cover Section 4, which is the state debt and general obligations.
First, state debt is authorized by law. This can be done as a one-time issuance or not to exceed amount that's in statute. GO bonds definitely have voter authorization for the full faith and credit authority of the state of Alaska. GO bonds also cover subject to appropriation and state revenue bonds. For instance, the state has an enterprise fund, the Alaska International Airport System, so the airport issues revenue bonds. The State Bond Committee authorizes debt in terms of method and timing of the debt issues to match the project cash flow needs. And then to dig into some other subject to appropriation debt, we have the School Debt Reimbursement Program and then HB 528 reimbursement projects, which is under the Transportation Infrastructure Debt Reimbursement Authorization. And as you know, SDRP has been periodically funded in 2017, 2020, and 2022. There was no funding in 2021. And with the FY23 budget, there was offsets to previous entitlements under the school debt reimbursement program. Also, on the next couple of slides, I will get into the unfunded actuarially assumed liability for the pension system. This utilizes the 6/30/21 report, actuarial report, the June 30, 2022 actuarial report is in draft form, and I understand that that will not be reviewed by their board until June of this year.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you, through the chair. Mr. Williams, the school bond debt reimbursement program, do you keep a total amount for us to pay off the debt? I know that we are not, no one's authorized to continue, and presuming that we paid it all off, what our total cost to pay off that's the state side of the school bond debt obligation would be.
Sure, through the chair, Representative Hannon. For the school debt reimbursement program, there's approximately $657 million outstanding. That is issued at the municipal level. So through the Department of Education, after multiplying their percentages of each of their individual projects, the total amount outstanding that's subject to appropriation from the state is $440.2 million.
One follow-up?
Follow-up, Representative Hammond.
And if we were following the, through the chair, Mr. Williams, if we were following the normal payback ratio and timeline, how many years of additional debt is that currently funded or currently owed? Is that 5 years or is that?
It's through the chair, Representative Hannon. I could maybe get back with the definite final maturity date. It is in the debt book, and I believe it's
2025. I believe it's the moratorium.
Oh, sorry. The moratorium is in place for 25, but currently outstanding, the debt service schedule, I believe, is 2040. But I will double check that final maturity date.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And on slide 14, I've zeroed in on the outstanding general obligation debt of the state and also included subject to appropriation debt. Subject to appropriation includes the certificates of participation for the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, a housing facility project, and also Goose Creek Correctional Facility lease revenue bonds, and also the Lenny Aquillo Parking Garage. And current outstanding with all of those that I've mentioned is approximately $800 million. I've also included interest remaining to maturity and total debt service to maturity. The unrestricted general fund portion of the payment in 23 is approximately $73.5 million for GO bonds and $22.4 million for those subject to appropriation bonds. The charts below depict a graphical representation of the pay down of the GO debt service. The GO debt service is in an accelerated pay down. Approximately 72% of the outstanding principal is paid down within 10 years, which is considered accelerated. And then also.
Representative Kochar Edgman, did you have a question?
Yeah, I did. So in, from the bond rating agency perspective, in terms of measuring, I don't know the proper terminology, Alaska's solvency, our ability to handle the debt that we have on the books, our ability to make our payments, you referenced just a moment ago having bonds being put on the market and within an hour of that being scooped up. But in terms of measuring things, would it be fair to say there's sort of two ways of sort of looking at Alaska's level of indebtedness? One is how much we owe on an annual basis, or the percentage of our revenues. I think that would be one benchmark. But the other, of course, would be if you just put it in a big aggregate, some of these numbers look pretty daunting, right? But I don't think that Alaska is unlike other states, right, who have other, you know, sort of cumulative amounts out there but are paying off their debt year by year. But maybe you could just sort of comment on that to help put that into perspective.
Through the chair, Representative Edgman, that's an excellent question. From a ratings perspective, when you look at the liabilities, some of the long terms, obviously the state has never defaulted on any of the repayments of those bonds, hence why we have such a high credit within our bonds. As far as looking at the debt over an extended period of time, back in 2013 and 14 when GASB 67 and 68 was introduced, and then thereafter was GASB 75, which was for the net pension obligation and other post-employment benefits. So that does take into consideration the aggregate liability that the state has. Knowing that it's not in any given point in time, that it's over a period of time that those plan assets and plan liabilities are sufficient to cover over a period of time. So that does weigh in from a rating perspective, but not necessarily on any given point in time. It's more of a longer term assessment.
Hello?
If I might, and I think it goes without saying that we have the most able backstop of them all in terms of the United States, that's called the permanent fund. But we also in 2018 passed a structured draw bill called the percentage of market valuation concept, which had to really be quite reassuring to the bond rating agencies and anybody else willing to invest in Alaska. And I don't think I'm saying anything that nobody around the table doesn't know about. But it's worth underscoring that we do have the permanent fund as part of our overall portfolio, but as well, we've got a disciplined plan in place to utilize it going forward.
Madam Chair, if I may,
yes.
Just to add to that, when a lot of these bonds or these credits are issued, the state's full fate pledge is assigned to this, which means that they essentially have unlimited taxing authority in order to meet the debt obligations for these bonds. So it's absent of the general fund being able to service the debt, that the state would look at other means in order to be able to service its obligation, which hasn't been an issue before.
Thank you.
Madam Chair. Oops, sir.
Excuse me. Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, Deputy Commissioner, could you repeat the three COPs, their certificates of participation? The last one was Goose Creek. Perhaps it was Mr. Williams. That... Yeah.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson. The third is the, apologize if I'm not pronouncing this correctly, but the Lenny Pacquiao parking garage was issued as GO of the AHFC.
And the first two were what?
The first two, the COPs were for the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium Housing Facility Project in 2014. And the Matsu lease revenue bonds for the Goose Creek Correctional Center.
And phone?
Follow up, Representative Josephson.
On the previous issue of school bond debt reimbursement and the moratorium of 2025, the $440 million that's outstanding is applications that were made before the moratorium, as I understand. Do you have, and maybe this is more for the attorneys, but under Casile, which involved capital construction, I think, we can't just indefinitely have a moratorium, correct? Because because of the state's obligation to renovate and build. In other words, this debt, it can't be stagnant forever. Am I right about that? If you know.
Madam Chair, Representative Josephson, I will attempt to address at least some elements of your questions. From a legal perspective, Department of Revenue is not going to take a stance on that. As it pertains to the outstanding debt, the existing debt, yes, the state does have an obligation to ensure that that debt is serviced through the municipalities. To the extent of moving beyond that, obviously that's the decision of the legislative body in terms of whether they want to continue that moratorium or if they in fact want to take that into consideration in future years to allow for municipal government, school district to maintain their facilities.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Well, we have another question, Representative Staff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair to, I guess, either the Deputy Commissioner or Mr. Williams, I'm curious on the slide, is there any potential benefit the state would incur by trying to attempt to pay off these GO liabilities earlier, or are we basically just fixed into the bond rating?
Through the chair to Representative Stapp, with the original issuance of each of these subsets of GO bonds that are outstanding, they'll have different par call dates. And so if, for instance, if you were to pay down the balance and, you know, all of these bonds would not be callable until a certain redemption date, you would have to legally fund an escrow with principal and interest payments to that redemption date. And so an analysis would vary on above this amount stated if you were to legally defease those bonds.
Thank you.
I will continue on to slide 15. This is taken from the Alaska Public Debt Book and shows current principal outstanding for those obligations of the state in descending order, if you will, on payment from general fund. Number one, GO bonds with the full faith and credit authority of the state of Alaska. There's also state guaranteed debt for collateralized veterans mortgage program bonds, state supported debt. I had broken those out slightly with COPs and lease revenue pledges. State-supported debt, there we list the current state's portion of the school debt reimbursement program, and then also the transportation infrastructure HB 528 projects. This unfunded actuarial accrued liability is from the 6/30/21 actuarial report. About $3.9 billion. State moral obligation debt, a majority of this is through the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank Authority of about $993 million outstanding. Also Alaska Energy Authority, power revenue bonds. State revenue debt includes both the Alaska International Airport System and the University of Alaska. Continued on to slide 16. And then state agency debt and state agency collateralized or insured debt includes a majority of which is through the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, also a subsidiary of the Northern Tobacco Securitization Corporation, and then also ADA with their power revenue bonds for a grand total of approximately $9.5 billion.
Okay, we have a question from Representative Stapp, followed by Representative Josephson.
thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair to Mr. Williams. So I'm curious, obviously we had kind of referenced this before, the outstanding unfunded pension liability based off the briefings that we were given through Mr. Painter from Ledge Finance, and of course OMB, seems like that number might be off by, oh, I don't know, a few billion dollars at this point. I'm curious, when those figures are updated, what might the rating agency look at our overall credit outlook to reflect the updated numbers on the outstanding unfunded liability for the pensions? Guys?
Sure. Through the chair, representative staff, with these values in the public debt book, there is a one-year lag. So this is the 2021 actuarial report for both outstanding PERS and TERS liabilities. And actually, to address your second part of the question, too, that through rating agencies, we utilize publicly available information, and so Buck Global had presented to the ARM board at the beginning of December 2022, and they had draft information regarding the 2022 actuarial valuation report. And so we had utilized those numbers in presentation to the rating agencies with a disclaimer that it's a preliminary number and subject to final approval by the ARM board.
Unaudited
as well.
Thank you.
All right. Next up, we have Representative Josephson, followed by Co-Chair Edgman.
Thank you. Representative Staff asked my question. Thank you.
All right. Co-Chair Edgman.
Yeah, just in terms of benchmarking, correct me if this is a misstatement, but my understanding in terms of Alaska's overall debt picture, even as a standalone item, but in comparison to other states, is that our debt is fairly low overall. Would you concur with that?
Through the chair, Representative Edgman, I concur. We have a fairly modest debt program, especially in comparison to our current projection on revenues. And so also, to maybe take a step beyond that, rating agencies have a multitude of factors that they look into. And so in general, the state debt outstanding box is somewhat favorable, but they do review all other aspects of the state's finances.
Follow-up, Representative Edgman.
So I just wanted to put that out there because more often than not, the legislature, it seems primarily, you know, we don't always get the highest marks for our financial management and our ability to spend and bring in revenue and manage our fiscal affairs. But in reality, the legislature, along with the various executive branch administrations that have come along, have done a pretty reasonable job in terms of putting the state in the red, if you will, in the future. But it's interesting, you know, the bond rating agency reports I've read in the past, and I haven't read any recently. What? You know, they do talk about sort of non-quantitative aspects as well in terms of the state's overall financial health. And we're a state that's, you know, for 9 years running has been losing population. And it's not been a mass exodus yet, but it's been a fairly significant amount of younger people that are leaving the state and a population as a whole that's getting older. And we do have workforce challenges going forward. But I'm wondering if that's beginning to seep into some of the verbiage in these bond rating agency reports.
Through the chair, Representative Edgman, yes, that is considered one of their framework under the economy. They do look at a lot of the statistics in terms of population trends. They look at the industry sectors in terms of the employer opportunities. So it's something that do gets taken into consideration from a rating perspective.
And through the chair, apparently I misspoke. I should have said red when I meant black.
Black
when I meant red. Okay.
Put us in the black, hopefully.
Numbers are colorblind. Thank you.
And next up, we have Representative Hannon.
Thank you. Through the chair, Mr. Williams, understate agency debt is the Northern Tobacco Securitization Corporation 2021 tobacco settlement asset-backed bonds. And I am confused by that. So could you help me understand? I thought we received revenue through that tobacco settlement, but the way it's laid out here, it looks like we are owed that. And in that, the interest on it is substantially more than the initial debt. And so I assume it's over a long period of time. So if you could just help me understand that listed debt.
Sure. Through the chair, Representative Hannon, these bonds were refinanced in 2021. Originally, the state divested its position in tobacco settlement, and I would have to look up the original date of that. And so the structure of these bonds through a subsidiary of AHFC issues the bonds, and the state receives certain capital project initiatives within that structure. And for a full explanation, I would hope that I could get back to the committee by providing financial statements of the corporation and then also with a bit of assistance through AHFC on the structure and concerns.
One follow-up?
Follow-up, Representative Hannon.
Thank you, through the chair. And Mr. Williams, when you're doing that little bit of homework for me, could you make sure and ask, so there's been a policy debate about the state being in compliance with the federal obligation to have age 21 is smoking, and that, so I want to know whether these are treated just as bond debt or if any policy ramifications affect that coming due or growth over time. If we did not comply with the T21 compliance, does that affect this debt, or is it this is just a financial instrument named because of that original asset that we then bonded against?
Yes.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
On slide 18, in conjunction with the Alaska Public Debt Book, we provide an annual update of the debt affordability analysis. Both those documents mentioned are delivered by January 31st. These discuss credit ratings, debt levels, history and projections. This also gives directly the debt that is directly paid by the state is quoted as a percentage of total revenues and forecasted revenues, and those roll into the analysis of the debt affordable over the 10-year forecast horizon. The 2023 analysis determined that the state conservatively had a debt capacity of about $1.65 billion. Adjustments are made to that analysis prudently, the total amount of the statutory transfer through the POMV is not all available to service debt, as a portion of that would go towards dividend payments, and so that analysis recognizes that there would be a split there.
Representative Stapp.
So just a quick clarification. You say the analysis to, through the chair to the director, my apologies. Did you say the analysis said our bonding capacity was $1.6 billion? Can I get a follow-up, Madam Chair?
Follow-up, Representative Stapp.
Just to the point of our permanent fund, it seems, wouldn't, in theory, with a $70 billion investment fund, we would have a higher bonding capacity? Just curious.
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, this is based on debt ratios of your currently available revenue, and so it estimates an annual payment of debt service that already takes current outstanding debt and what that difference would be over time. And so when you're strictly using a limit of 4% for all outstanding direct pay debt, the current value is $1.65 billion. It would be slightly more, slightly less if you're combining other state-supported payments.
Just quick clarification, follow-up, Madam Chair.
All right, follow-up, Representative Stapp.
Yep, thank you, Madam Chair. So effectively, it's because of our debt service obligations are already incorporated into the structure. Is that correct?
Correct.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Slide 19, we've already gone over a lot of these items, but call out the fiscal year requirement for debt or annual principal payments over the next 5 years or so on GO bonds is in the $40 to $50 million range. Those lease revenue bonds are in the $17 to $24 million range. SDRP outstanding is $440.2 million. And there's no currently outstanding GO authorization. On slide 20, the top chart shows that we're in somewhat of an accelerated pay down of debt. General fund supported debt service payments peaked in 2018 at approximately $230 million. If you're looking at only or isolating FY23 general fund debt service payments, it's about $95.9 million. And then there's about $850 million of remaining debt service to maturity on the GO debt.
With that, Madam Chair, that wraps up our presentation, and we're open to any questions.
All right, we have a question, Representative Lopez.
Thank you, Madam Chair, through the Chair. And thank you, Deputy Commissioner Lamani and Mr. Williams, for your presentation today. It was quite helpful, and I appreciate your presentation very much. I might have missed the introduction process. I wasn't here at the beginning. I was expecting to see Mr. Fetcher here. Is he no longer with the Department of Revenue, or do you know anything about that situation? Because he's normally, when I walked in the room, I expected to see him, and he's not here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Ortiz, previous Deputy Commissioner Fechter has decided to move on from the Department of Revenue. He wanted to focus on other opportunities within his career.
Perfect sense. I wasn't aware. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Well, very good. Seeing no additional questions, it looks like that concludes our presentation. Let's see what we have for tomorrow. Our next meeting will be February 8th, Wednesday, at 1:30, and we will receive an update on the Federal Infrastructure Investment Jobs Act, ILJA. Presenting will be Mike Anderson, Acting Infrastructure Coordinator, Office of the Governor, and Niels Andresen, Executive Director for Alaska Municipal League, and Nicole Baromeo, Executive Director for Executive Vice President, Alaska Federation of Natives. So with that, at 2:26, we are adjourned.